Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And welcome to a special edition of the Geektown Radio podcast and the Geektown Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host, Dave Elliott, and as it's Easter, I gave the co-host the week off. However, we do have some brilliant interviews for you this week, two in fact, particularly if you're a fan of Star Trek Discovery, which returns to Paramount Plus for its final season on the 4th of April. So as I said, we've got two interviews this week. The first one is with the Discovery captain herself, Sonequa Martin-Green, who plays Michael on the show. We got to chat about her feelings about the series coming to a close, the journey of her character Michael, and whether we'll get to see more of her in a Starfleet uniform at some point, maybe in the future. Had a really lovely chat with her. Coming after that, we have a slightly longer chat with the incredibly prolific TV and film composer Jeff Russo, who, amongst many, many other things, scores Star Trek Discovery, along with being something of an overseer for the franchise as a whole. We'll talk more about Jeff in a moment, but first, here's the interview with the wonderful Sonequa Martin-Green. It's lovely to chat with you a bit about Star Trek Discovery.
Ah, thank you. I'm happy to be chatting with you.
I saw the first few episodes of the new and final season, which I absolutely loved. How are you feeling now that it's coming to a close? Because you didn't know before you filming it that it was going to be a final season, did you?
No, we did not know. And like, people will see when they see the season that there is something so grand about it and so epic and culminating in a sense. And so I'm grateful because it almost seems like we did know, but we didn't. So we found out a few months after we wrapped season 5, and then CBS and Paramount Plus, you know, graciously allowed us to go back up to Toronto and shoot a coda shoot so we could truly wrap up the show. And so, yeah, I've been saying to a lot of people, like, these three words, feeling this just deep sense of gratitude, achievement, and ownership. Like, those are the words I would use to describe how I feel now, because these feelings have really settled since it's been so long since we shot. I've had time to process it.
Yeah. It's a really great arcing story you've got for the last season. There's a slight different tone, I think, to this season. There's a lot more sort of joyous and adventurous, and there's a really nice feel to this season. Not that there hasn't been for the other seasons as well, of course, but...
I know exactly.
Yeah. What can you say about the new season?
Well, I mean, I think I'll say again, like, it is just so grand. And yes, there is that sense of adventure and fun. They wanted it to be almost like an Indiana Jones type adventure season. And there is that, you know. Even when we were on set shooting, it became almost like a mantra we would say to each other. It'd be like, before we would roll, it'd be like, it's an adventure, you know. I remember it's an adventure. You know, Michelle Paradise, our showrunner, when she would come to visit, you know, we'd all say it together, you know, it's an adventure. It's funny. But yes, I would say that, you know, just speaking on the series as a whole through the lens of season 5, it's culminating in all these ways, and it's culminating for every character. And I think people will be pleased. I think that it wraps the show quite respectfully.
Good. It deserves a solid ending, this show, because
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you.
For Michael, it's been a really interesting journey through the series from sort of mutineer to captain where you are now. Season 5 particularly, without giving anything away, you do get to sort of play into that almost quite directly in episodes. Yeah. So what are your feelings on the sort of journey that Michael's been on?
Well, that, you know, from the very beginning, I knew that it was a journey to the chair. I couldn't share that with everyone, but that was always the idea, right? Mm-hmm. But I had no clue just how powerful that journey would be. Being able to go from mutineer, sentenced to life in prison, to captain of the Starship Discovery. But I mean, it's just so profound, but it was also earned, you know, you got to see every little thing, every little failure that happened between there, every little aspect of growth, every little confrontation that it required. And then I just am so grateful, especially as a Black woman, because typically we don't get those kinds of second chances. And you're always taught, or at least we used to be taught in the Black community, that, you know, you better not, you better not mess up. You better not fail. You know, it's that whole having to work twice as hard to go half as far thing. And so being able to bring this story to life where you get to see this woman literally fall forward and find herself and accept her purpose and rise up to it and open up and settle into herself and settle into her mission in life. It's just, I'm so blessed. I thank God for being able to tell that story.
Yeah, it's been an incredible journey to go through with her as well. And when you came into it, I mean, as you said, you knew it was heading towards the captain's chair. Did you know much more about how you were going to get there? Like, particularly things like the big time jump into the future. Did they give you any hint of that when you first started?
No, there was no hint of jumping to the future. That's for sure. When we started, you know, we came into an interesting time 10 years before TOS. And so we knew that we were going to be different from other iterations because we were hyper serialized and we were going to remember what happened yesterday and carry it with us. And so automatically the tone was going to be a little different. But I think when we did jump to the future in season 3, our one of the co-creators of the show, Alex Kurtzman, and our co-showrunner, I remember talking to him about what a brilliant choice I think that was, because we got to stay connected in all the important ways to the canon, but then go and be our own selves and establish our own identity, our own environment. We got to make decisions that were creating canon every single day because we went further beyond where any Trek had gone before.
Yeah.
So the whole go boldly, we literally did, you know. And then even one of our executive producers and our producing director, Alatunde Asunsanmi, had this idea of programmable matter. And then Alex and Michelle Paradise, our other brilliant showrunner, they all kind of came together and created a mastermind along with the other writers. And it ended up being a tenet of this new future. And a big factor in our show was this programmable matter and being able to see into the future in this way, which is very much what Trek does.
It's been really interesting with this latest iterations of Trek since Alex took over the sort of franchise, because I think what's been so brilliant is you've got this range of shows now where I know a lot of people that had never watched Trek before they watched Discovery, and Discovery was the thing that got them in. And then you have things like Strange New Worlds, which is far more classic Trek, and then got the next gen stuff with Picard and Lower Decks, and then the younger generation with Prodigy. It's been amazing how they've expanded that franchise out. I think they've done such a wonderful job with it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's crazy to think of being a mothership. You know, we've been speaking about this a lot. I was just speaking about this earlier this morning, that when we started out, you know, we very much were the little sibling, you know, and we were like, oh gosh, what are we doing here? You know, and like, we gotta do this right. We gotta make everybody proud, you know? all the alum from the treks before us, you know, they just welcomed us with open arms, like big brothers and big sisters, like aunts and uncles. Like, I mean, they just welcomed us in with open arms. And then so did the fan base, like so did the audience. And we were just doing our best to cradle it and take care of it as best as we could, give it our all. And then all of a sudden, you know, these other iterations were coming from us. And we were like, whoa, wow, okay. You know, it really helped encourage us and it helped settle us down, gave us confidence. And it's quite delightful to see what has come. I've heard that this is apparently called the Latinum age of Trek.
Right. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. So yeah, we brought it in. It's such a blessing. It's such a blessing. Yeah.
So one last thing. Obviously, this is the end of Discovery as a series, but there are other things coming up, like the Starfleet Academy series, Section 31. Yes. Are we likely to see Michael again at some point?
You know, we could. We could. The door is open. There's definitely potential there. So, I mean, it would be a lot of fun if I could. I would love to do that. I think all of us would love to do that. We just so dearly love it. We love these people and this story and each other. So yeah, I think the door is open for that. Yes, I think there's loads of opportunity.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward. I've only seen the first four episodes because that's all they sent me. I'm looking forward to seeing the whole thing when it drops. And it's such a great show. I will miss it when it's gone, but I'm doing a great job with the franchise. So,
thank you, David. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Have a wonderful day.
Okay. Thank you. You too.
So that was the interview with Sonequa Martin-Green, who you can catch when Star Trek Discovery returns for the final time on Thursday, the 4th of April on Paramount Plus. Next up, I'm chatting with composer Jeff Russo. Spoken to Jeff a number of times before. It's always lovely to catch up with him. It's 10 years since we first actually spoke, and I think we last spoke in 2018. As I mentioned earlier, he was composer on all the seasons of Star Trek Discovery, but he's also kind of an overseer of the music for the entire Star Trek franchise. He wrote things like the theme for Strange New Worlds. He also wrote the first two seasons of Picard, and he's doing the upcoming Star Trek Section 31 film as well. But not only that, he actually has two shows dropping this week. So one of them is Discovery, and that's coming on April 4th. But also on April 4th, he has Ripley dropping on Netflix. This is the new adaptation of The Talented Mr. Ripley, starring Andrew Scott, which reteams Jeff with the brilliant director, Steve Zaillian, who he previously worked with on the incredible miniseries The Night Of. So those are the two projects which are dropping this week for him. I mean, you might think that the whole of Star Trek and a series from Netflix will keep him fairly busy. That's where you'd be wrong. He is also the man behind the music for all the seasons of FX's Fargo, Apple TV's For All Mankind, Amazon's Bosch Legacy and The Consultant, Star Series Power Book 2 Ghost, Netflix's The Umbrella Academy. He also composed FX drama Snowfall, and he's co-composing on the CBS dramedy So Help Me Todd. That's not to leave out all the various films and limited series he's been working on over the past few years, such as Love and Death, Mrs. Davis, The Man Who Fell to Earth, and Brand New Cherry Flavor, or his previous work, which includes things like Lucifer, Altered Carbon, Warrior Nun, and the original Power series. It's ridiculous CV that Jeff Russo has. He's a phenomenal and prolific composer. We got to talk to him for about half an hour, covered as much as we possibly could, obviously talked about Discovery with the final season coming up. We particularly talk about Ripley as well in this interview, as those are the two things coming up. We do talk a little bit about the Umbrella Academy, because that's got its final season coming up in August this year, and some other bits and pieces as well. well, like So Help Me Todd and a few of his other projects. So, oh, the other thing, he's working on the Alien show as well, which Noah Hawley is doing, who he previously worked with on the TV show Legion. That was one I've forgotten, left out. Ridiculous amount of stuff that I could talk to Jeff about, but he's wonderful to talk to. He's really interesting how he approaches the music for these shows. Just great catching up with him. If you'd like to hear any more behind-the-scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geektown Radio. That, of course, also gives you the main Geektown Radio show as well, which brings you all the latest TV, film, and gaming news. You can also go onto the website at geektown.co.uk for daily news stories and all the latest UK and US TV premiere dates. We will be back with a normal Geektown Radio show going out on Tuesday next week. Hope you all had a great Easter. We will be back then. Here's the interview with the wonderful Jeff Russo.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Thank you for spending the time to come on and chat with me a bit. We have spoken a number of times before. Actually, the first time I spoke to you was 2014, so it's been 10 years since we first spoke.
Wow, that's a long time. 10 years goes by in a heartbeat, huh?
It does these days. It's crazy. Getting old, I think. Yeah, I mean, you've been up to quite a lot since we last spoke. I think we covered like Legion and Discovery probably just come out, maybe when we last spoke in 2018. So yeah. Been busy since then. Lots of interesting projects coming up as well. One of the newest ones you're about to start working on is Ripley, or you have done already, I guess.
I've been working on that for the last 4 years.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it's been a long time of writing, and 3.5 years is more like it. But yeah, we spent a good amount of time during the shooting while they were filming in Italy, and back and forth between me and Steve, who's the director, mm-hmm. you know, talking about what the themes could be and what the style is, and going from one thing to another until we landed in the place that we needed to be. And now we're here. It's all coming out in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's an interesting project as well, because I mean, it's all been on Netflix. It's all shot in black and white as well. And then you've got this background to it being in the 60s. Does the fact that it's sort of shot in black and white actually affect you and how you approach it musically at all? Or is it?
Not really. I mean, it's black and white doesn't really affect how I went about doing what I was doing. We wanted to approach it from it being a thriller, and the score should sound like of that time. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't meant to be like a throwback. It was just meant to fit the picture. And because he wanted it to look like it was shot in early 60s.
Yeah.
And I think that lent itself to how I went about writing the score.
Right. You said you'd be working on this for 4 years and going kind of back and forth. So were you starting to work on it pre them actually shooting stuff then?
Yeah. I actually started right around the time that they began shooting. That was really when I began sketching themes and ideas. And the first themes I wrote, which doesn't really appear in the show very often, like it appears in the show like once or twice, little bits of the theme, was the very first thing I wrote, the very last thing on the soundtrack. And then I sort of worked backwards from there.
Okay. So you say you sort of try to invoke the 60s vibe to it?
Yeah. I mean, it's less of a vibe. It's more like invoking the ethos, like how did they go about scoring something then, as opposed to using modern scoring technique? And I don't mean like compositional technique. I mean, like, actually, how are we using the music? In what way are we using music? How are we punctuating emotional scenes? How are we dealing with mysterious stuff and tension? And I think we went about that in a way that was more like what we would have done in 1963 than modern. But there's a modern take to it. It's it's an amalgam of so many different styles, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't mean musical style. I mean scoring style, like how music is used.
Yeah. What were you doing in terms of the actual instrumentation and that sort of stuff for it? Were you looking at any particularly unique instruments for it, or was it traditional?
It takes place in Italy. So there's a lot of sort of Italian instruments. I used guitar. I used mandolin, mandola. I used accordion. And then on top of that, using orchestral instruments to sort of underscore the more emotional stuff, you know, the strings and winds and harp and piano. But I did keep it small. It's not this like big grand orchestral thing. It's way more chamber sized. And that really did fit the idea of what this feels like.
Yeah, that makes sense for something like this. I mean, it's a really, really interesting looking project. You've worked with Steve before because you did The Night Of, didn't you?
I worked with Steve before. He's an extraordinary filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of interest, that show. So I'm hoping it comes out to be a big hit for Netflix. I mean, because it's a really interesting project.
We'll see.
There's so much stuff that I could talk to you about because, I mean, you recently did Fargo season 5. I mean, that came out earlier this year, actually. It went out.
Came out in November.
November.
Finished in mid-February.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a fascinating show to work on because you've worked on all seasons of that, haven't you? So, again, you've got one which is jumping through different time periods. You're back in sort of more 2019, I think, the current one, but you've been
before the pandemic.
Yeah. That's a show that through different seasons, it's jumped from like 1920s to sort of late 70s and then mid 2000s and all that sort of stuff. When you're approaching a show like that, is there stuff thematically that goes from one season to another because it's an anthology thing? So it's completely different.
There's definitely a style that has a through line through seasons. And then there are two themes that do thread through all of them. There's the main title theme. So that definitely makes its way into all seasons. And then there's in the first season, I wrote this piece of music called Wrench and Numbers, which ended up being the bad guy theme, throughout the entire seasons. And apart from style, which there's a style that I have threaded through every season, the way I use an orchestra, the way I tend to work with melody versus, sort of just feeling. And then, of course, there's the way I use percussion, which has been predominant in the score across all these seasons. So there isn't I'd say there's just those two themes that definitely appear in all the seasons. But other than that, it's like all new themes, all new music. But in terms of a style, a stylistic approach to how I write the music and how I score the show, there's definitely a through line.
There's been a lot of love out there, particularly for the fifth season and for the music in the fifth season as well. I mean, I've seen a lot of comments about how much people loved it and it's such a great show. What were some of the sort of unique things that you brought into season 5?
Well, with every season, I do tend to try to take some of the real life sounds and put them in to the show. In this one, it was like a whisk and a mixing bowl because she had this obsession with making pancakes.
Yeah.
Biscuit. There's that. There's other kitchen utensil-y type things that I've added in. It's usually in terms of percussion and sounds that relate to the actual narrative. And I brought back the idea of this big drumline thing, which really felt especially towards the end of the season, there becomes this militaristic feeling as they're engaging Roy Tillman's ranch and that whole thing. So I wanted to have that feeling throughout the whole show. I'd say that's what I was trying to build into this season that I hadn't maybe in season 4.
Yeah, that's really interesting thing. And I mean, I think hopefully Fargo goes on forever because I mean, there's so many different ways that you could tell.
Well, what I will say is nothing lasts forever. And my understanding about whether or not there will be any more Fargos is there will be if there's a story to tell. Mm-hmm. Why not? We can continue to tell stories in the same way. Like I think Noah has said to me, he'd be happy to as long as there's something to say.
Yeah, which is certainly the best way to look at it. Absolutely. As well as Ripley coming out, you've got another show dropping for its final season. That one is coming to an end, which is Star Trek Discovery. Yeah. I mean, I love all the Star Trek series. I'm a huge nerd for that sort of stuff. But Discovery, I have actually seen the first couple of episodes of the new season. I got sent some previews of it and really, really like what they're doing with that final season. Musically, it's great. You've been working on that. Have you been coming to that fifth season? Was there much sort of looking back over what you've done over the five season run?
It's funny, going into season five, it wasn't clear whether or not there would be a season six.
Right.
It wasn't until about midway through that we found out that we were going to close out this part of the story for Trek. So I wasn't really looking at it one way or another and trying to tell the story to a fitting conclusion musically. But I do always connect all of the seasons because they're a connected group of characters. So when you have an ensemble cast across all seasons, like, I want to keep them musically connected. The stories are different, and I tell each story from a different perspective musically, ranging from the Red Angel in season two to everything that happened in season three to season four and now into season five. There's these different central issues and central storytelling devices, but they're all sort of related to the same group of people. And they do that in different ways. So I have to keep that all connected. So I do that thematic music coming back, making its way back into the show that maybe you hadn't heard since season one or season two, or I do try to do that. I will say that as we did come to the end and I started writing music for the finale episode, what I realized is it left me the ability to create a satisfying musical ending for the show.
Yeah, that's good. They didn't send me all the episodes. Like, I've only seen the first four, I think. So I'm really interested to see where that ends up going. I will say that, I mean, I love the theme to that show, and it's one of the few shows where I won't like use the skip title thing, and I will sit and watch because
I do appreciate that. I really do.
It's got, without giving anything away, it has got some interesting callbacks to some other Trek stuff in there as well.
I feel like we do that in all the Treks, you know, like we do that in Strange New Worlds.
Yes.
We do that in Picard, and we have done that all across the animated series, and we're about to do it again with Section 31, and we're about to, you know what I mean? Like, we have all of these ways of connecting the entire universe, and it's not just rehashing. It's like the whole... It's connecting the entire world of Star Trek.
Yeah, absolutely. Strange New Worlds is a phenomenal show as well. I know you don't do the main score for that, but you did do the title theme for that, which is a sort of variation on the classic theme. Was that daunting to sort of take that and create a new version of the Alexander Courage theme for that?
I mean, you know, I didn't set out to do something that was connected to that, although it's easy to want to be connected to it all. So I do... You know, of course, starting with the fanfare and then leading into a melody that is our own, and yet still feeling somehow connected to the whole world of it. That was sort of the idea.
Yeah.
In the same way that I did the end titles of the show, in the same way they did the end titles of the original series, which was as a take on the theme itself.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, it's such a great theme. And the one thing you did do as well was for the musical episode, you did a new version of the theme as well there.
Yeah,
well,
which the sort of more vocal version.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. That was such a fun episode as well. I mean, that was just great. You mentioned Section 31. You're scoring that as well, are you?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing the Starfleet Academy series as well?
You know, we're always sort of talking about things, about what I'm going to be able to be doing, and that has not been settled yet. And the only reason is because it's so far in the future.
Right. Where
it's still in that planning stage. So what my involvement, as I've spoken to Alex Kurtzman about this, like, I am involved in all Star Trek as much as he wants me to be.
Right.
Because I'm a huge fan and I do what I can. Like with Section 31, it was wanting to be involved in that and then me having an idea and then, you know, going and figuring out what that is. With Strange New Worlds, there wasn't a way that I could do that. And because at the time that that started, I was working on Discovery and Picard season one and two.
Yeah.
So I was asked to write the theme and to sort of oversee see the musical connectivity of the whole thing in the world and how we do it. Nami is a spectacularly talented composer and needs no input from me. But you know what I'm saying? So I'm sort of asked to be around when I'm asked to be around.
Yeah.
And Section 31 I'm working on, and Starfleet Academy, if the call comes in, and Alex and I have had conversations about that show and what that show could be musically and how that might connect to the universe and how it might not connect to our universe. So I'm always, I would say, always available to the Star Trek universe to be involved. And that was it. I stepped away from Picard season 3 for a number of reasons, one of which was I was working on Alex's other show, The Man Who Fell to Earth, at the time. Yes. I simply could not put in all the time necessary for both shows at the same time. It was just simply too much work.
Yeah.
And Stephen Barton and Freddie Wideman did a fantastic, fantastic job.
Yeah, that was a great series. Ended spectacularly as well. I mean, it's really, really good. Really loving what they're doing with the Star Trek stuff at the moment. It's been brilliant. You've got another show coming to an end as well this year, because Umbrella Academy comes to an end as well.
I literally just scored and mixed the last episode of it 2 weeks ago.
Wow. Yeah.
That's, I think, airing sometime later this year, coming to Netflix.
August 8th, I believe that is. Yes.
There you go. And it is a very satisfying ending.
Good.
Very satisfying.
Has the music in that evolved much over? Because again, that's another one that jumps around in time a lot.
I would say, again, in the same way that Star Trek is connected by a group of core characters, I have the same idea with the Umbrella Academy, which is it's this family, and they have their themes that I continually use. And then I've had to do new themes in every season for the new characters, you know. And we had the Swedes in season 2, season 3. We had the, I can't remember the name of the thing, the Kugelblitz.
Yes, that sounds right.
Something like that. And in this season, we have some new characters that I had to write for, you know, new interesting characters that are involved with the family. So I do that, and in that way, it has shifted, it has changed, and yet I also try to tie it all together.
Yeah, I've loved that show since the beginning. It's so bonkers and just wonderfully strange. I'm glad they are coming back and doing a final season, and they're getting to finish it, and because that's not always the case, certainly with Netflix shows. So I'm glad they're getting to come back with that. Oh yeah, there was another show which you're involved in, which is For All Mankind as well, on Apple, which that's been fantastic. Again, another one which has this jumping through time, because they jump forward 10 years every season as well. That must be a really interesting show to take on from your side.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely complex. It's definitely a challenge. And in that challenge, we have been rising to it. You know, it's like trying to tell the story over the different decades and following characters as they get older. And that has been a challenge. It really has been a challenge. But as we move through decade into new decade, we have tried to adjust the score, but not by too much. Like, you really were trying to tell the story of these characters. And because we lose characters every year because we're traveling through time, you know, it's been a little more complicated than most. Also because it's an alternative reality show, like we're not living in the reality, you know. So the producers have asked me to sort of update the style of the score as we've been going through decade and new decade. Mostly from a musical point of view, they use songs to do that, and they use different versions of songs as we get, like as we went into the 70s and we've got into the 90s, songs are the thing that would really place the time.
Yeah.
I have been sort of adding little bits to the score in terms of sound in order to update it as well, but nothing that changes its direction that drastically.
Yeah. That is another show which I think the showrunners have been quoted as saying that they reckon that they've got at least 7 seasons, assuming it gets renewed, which we don't know at the moment, but 70 years they reckon that they could cover with it. I would love to see more of that, though, because I think that's a phenomenal show. I'm not sure how long you can keep Joel Kinnaman around for, because at this point, I think this has to be his last season, surely.
Pretty old this last season.
Yeah, we'll see. He's still there at the end of it, so I'm expecting him to be back next one, but we'll see. I did notice, I was looking at your Instagram page, you've got a new toy in your studio, which I believe is a bass desmophone. Is that right?
Yes.
Was that bought for something specific, or was that just, I want one?
I'm currently working on a series with Noah Hawley based in the alien world. It's called Alien. So we're doing that. I bought it for that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting sounding instrument. It's basically a sort of giant metal triangle with a double bass sort of fret thing with a couple of strings on it. So just to describe to people that are listening to this anyway.
Well, it's difficult to describe because it's not something you see every day. Like, it's bespoke and was built by hand. And it is a stringed instrument that is attached to a big piece of metal. So it has a lot of reverberation to it. And it does a lot of things. It doesn't just sound like a bass or a cello or whatever. It sounds like nothing that you've heard.
Yeah, I love the sort of weird, wonderful instruments that you sort of end up finding. Like you mentioned, sort of using sounds from kitchen appliances and that sort of stuff. When you were doing Strange New Worlds, did you actually go and find a theremin for that?
Yeah, I had a theremin player play the...
Excellent.
You know, the team and Lara Wicks. I mean, she's incredible. It was definitely a treat having that happen.
Yeah, that's a hell of a skill.
Something I can't do. I have a theremin and I can make it make sound, but I can't play it like an instrument like she can.
That is a heck of a skill. The Alien show, I think, is particularly with Noah involved as well, I think is going to be a really fascinating one. So is that what you're working on next? Is that your next project?
That is what I'm currently working on, yes.
Yeah. So anything else lined up?
I mean, that's enough, isn't it? I am currently really headlong into that and looking at a couple of other projects. I'm starting a film soon that is currently just in the editing process. So I haven't really started working on that yet. But really, the alien thing will be taking up a lot of my time.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. You've also got kicking around So Help Me Todd as well, which your co-composer on.
I'm working on that with a close collaborator of mine, Sam Lucas. And you know, that's just a fun show to do. And we get to just sort of have fun with that. It's not like a dark drama. There's a lot of fun comedy. There's a lot of back and forth between our characters, and playing those moments is really fun. And that's a nice distraction for me from like aliens. Superheroes. Yeah. And, you know, and spaceships, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I love that show. It's so wonderfully cast. It's just really fun. It's a great sort of network comedy, sort of comedy drama. I really, really enjoy it. Like you say, it's nice to have that juxtaposition. I remember talking to Dom Lewis when he was doing Man in the High Castle, but was also doing DuckTales. And he was doing like one in the morning and one in the afternoon. You
know? That's really how I look at it. It's like, I look at So Help Me Todd in the morning and write, and then look at Alien in the afternoon and get scared.
Yeah, you've certainly got a lot to be going on with right now, I think. So I'm looking forward to the Alien series coming out.
You have a while to wait.
Yeah, I know that's going to be a while in the work. But I mean, Umbrella Academy, Section 31, Discovery.
All of that well before you see
Yes, Strange New Worlds coming back. And we've not even mentioned, like, you do Bosch Legacy as well, which is the other thing.
I'm starting that back in a few weeks, you know, and that, again, it's a little bit of a different style of show, you know, where there's very little score. With the score that we use is very important to the show. We have a much different way of looking at how much music we have and how we use score in that show.
Yeah, there's such a ridiculous amount of stuff that you're working on. So I thank you for taking some time to talk to me. A couple of very last questions for you, which I've asked you this, I think, every time we've spoken. It's always my final two questions. So first one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Well, I'm now on my second viewing of The Bear, which is one of my favorite shows of all time. And one of the reasons why that is because I spent a lot of my formative years working in kitchens. And that was my day job before music became something I could support myself with. I was a cook. And so I'm very attached to that. And I think that's a spectacular, spectacular show. Mm-hmm. I would say that's it. That's where I'm at. That's what I'm watching. It's the second time around. I'm watching with my kids now. It's incredible. It's really incredible.
Yeah.
I also started watching The Regime.
Yes.
And jury's still out for me. I don't know if I mean, I've only seen two episodes, so I like it, but I don't know yet. You know, like it's one of those things where like, I'm not sure yet. I'm just not sure. I love her. I would watch her read the phone book.
Yes.
But the entire idea of the show is like, I'm still sort of wading into it. You know, it's a lot to unpack.
Yeah. It's a really interesting one that, and I've heard similar things of like, you know, people saying, I'm not sure at the moment. It's one that I haven't quite got to yet. I've been like wading through previews and other things at the moment, so it is on my radar though, so I will take a look at it. So last question for you, and I'm not sure what you answered to this last time, but if you had the opportunity to work on any TV series, something from the past, something present day, or some sort of future genre that maybe you haven't worked in yet, although that's fairly limiting when it comes to you because you've done so much, but what would it be?
I don't know. I love a great story. Mm-hmm. And I love working with filmmakers who are engaged in the storytelling. And an interesting story told in an interesting way is always very appealing to me. So I've been very, very fortunate to work on these shows that have a really, really great story and really great filmmakers who really trust the process and really know how to do what they do. I would say in the last 5 years, I'd say Station 11, mm-hmm. which was that year, probably my favorite television show I had seen in a very, very long time. And I thought Dan Romer did such a great job. It was one of those things where I was like, oh, I wish I did that. Oh, I wish I never thought of that. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm saying that I'd want to have worked on it, but like that was one time where I was like, wow, that's refreshing and interesting to me. The way the story was told, the whole thing was to me perfectly executed. And I was very envious of that score. Like the idea that he had the opportunity to make that score and then he did. And he did that thing that he did. I was like, oh, I wish I had thought of that. Oh, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. Great choice as well. So, well, I know how busy you are, so I will let you get back to it. Have a wonderful rest of the day. Good luck with the new show coming out with Ripley, with Alien when it eventually turns up, Umbrella Academy, Discovery, all the others.
Lots of stuff. You know, it's funny that you say all these things. It's like, really, Discovery, I finished last year. Like,
yes, just, of course.
And Umbrella Academy, well, that's been a very long post process. You know, I started it last fall and just finished it now.
Wow.
Ripley, I'd been working on for 3.5 years. Last July, the score was finished. And then there were more changes that needed to be made as Steve made changes to the show. And then, of course, there was the strike. That sort of slowed things down because we couldn't do ADR. So mm-hmm. So once that was all good. So what I'm saying is it's not like I did 7 shows at once. That would be impossible. But I did leapfrog things, and then they all sort of end up coming out right around the same time. I think Discovery and Ripley come out on the same day, April 4th, right?
I think so, yeah. I'm sure people will love it. We'll love all of them when they come out. I mean, there are obviously lots of Star Trek fans. I think Ripley has a lot of interest, and Umbrella Academy, when that drops in August, I'm sure, yeah, there's lots of people that love that as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a great one too. It's fun.
Yeah, Alien, I know there's a lot of interest in that, particularly we know is involved as well. So good luck with everything. And hopefully we'll talk to each other again at some point.
I'm sure we will.
Maybe not 5 years gap for the next time.
Let's try to make sure that doesn't happen.
Yeah, awesome. Have a great day. I'll see you soon. Cheers. Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.